A tall, slender Mexican sat hunched in Ephraim Swan's tent, wearing a rumpled white suit and an impatient look. Swan sat across from him, drinking from a snifter of brandy.
How long do you expect my offer to stand? I, like you, have customers I must keep happy. If I do not bring them a product, then they begin to look elsewhere.
I'll get them for you, Eduardo. I told you I would, and I will. I have run into some, shall we say, unforeseen circumstances. They're nothing I can't handle in time.
Would these unforeseen circumstances be Mr. Frank Morgan, the famous gunman and desperado?
Huh. You know the bastard down in Mexico?
Oh, yes. He's quite a legend. I understand your problem, but unfortunately, I can only give you one more week. If you somehow get the girls back by then, my offer is still valid. Any time beyond that, and my buyers will begin to look at other markets. They are particularly interested in the red-headed senorita, so I will give you the agreed price for them whenever you bring them. The gueras, the blondes as well. But the price will go down considerably for all the others after this week. Frank Morgan or no, my feet are, how you say it, held to the fire.
Thank you for the week, Eduardo. I'll make good use of it, I promise you.
May I ask you what you plan to do? I have heard of your reward. I have also heard this Morgan has killed everyone who has challenged him so far.
I have sent the word all over about the reward. Men will begin to come and challenge him in droves. Some will go for him in town, others will try him on the prairie. Sooner or later, he will lose.
I hope, for your sake, Ephraim, it is sooner rather than later.
I've sent word to a very special man who should be able to speed things up. Once he hears, all our troubles should be over.
These are not my troubles. These are yours, and yours alone.
Swan smiled broadly. His face hid the inner fury that gnawed at his stomach. If in a week's time he didn't have the girls, Frank Morgan would still pay dearly, but so would Eduardo. For the next time they met, if the price was lowered 1 peso, Swan would see the bony Mexican torn limb from limb for all his smart, condescending attitude. 5 days later, the wagons pulled into the settlement of Garden City, Kansas, about 60 miles from the Colorado line. As the women entered the small mercantile, a well-dressed man in a high-collared shirt and bowler hat sauntered up on the boardwalk. He had a dark, pencil-thin mustache, which looked like it took a lot of work, under a crooked nose. An assortment of white scars adorned the backs of his large hands. He carried himself with a confident air of strength and grace, a bare-knuckle boxer.
Pardon me for intruding.
What can I do for you?
My name is George Carlyle.
The boxer stuck out a beefy paw. He smiled under his tiny mustache. There seemed to be nothing but admiration in his eyes. They shook hands.
Frank Morgan.
I know. You're the reason I'm here. I'm on assignment from a national detective agency.
Pinkerton?
After what they did to Jesse James' mother, Frank had little use for Alan Pinkerton or his men. Carlyle smiled, but didn't come out and admit to working for the infamous agency.
I spoke with Sheriff Masterson in Dodge. He told me about the trouble with Swan and his gang.
And?
You've no doubt heard of the $10,000 reward Swan has put on your head.
As Carlyle spoke, Frank was watching two trouble-hunting young men strolling across the street toward him like they owned the place.
And what business is this of yours, Mr. Carlyle?
Swan is a ruthless man.
I don't reckon I need you to tell me that. Pardon me. Looks like I have to take care of a little something.
Frank stepped off the boardwalk to face the two young men. One of them was big and oafish, with a lumbering gait that left huge tracks in the soft dirt of the street. The other, a head shorter than his compadre, wore a brace of two ivory-handled pistols and a frown.
Do you think he can use both those guns at the same time?
Carlyle had followed Frank into the street.
Some are able to. I'm a fair hand with two guns. Now, Mr. Carlyle, I don't mean to be rude, but there just might be gunplay here. Why don't you scoot back up on the sidewalk where it's safe?
I'll be fine. This might prove interesting.
You Frank Morgan?
I am. What's on your mind?
I think you're getting a little gray around the edges, old man.
Could be. Happens to us all sooner or later.
I don't think you're as off-fire good as folks say you are. You look all beat up to me. Maybe traipsing along with all those women has turned you into a woman your own self.
Who's this dude with you, Morgan? Your nanny? Looks like he's wearing half a melon on his head.
I want you to think about this, boys.
We ain't boys. I beat Matt Sunday not a month ago.
You killed Matthew Sunday?
Damn right I killed him. He's planted in the cemetery on the edge of town.
You must be fast then. Sunday's supposed to be pretty good.
He was faster than you. Hey, you know, partner, while my friend shoots Morgan and earns us a quick $10,000, I think I'll whip your ass just for the fun of it.
Carlisle smiled an easy smile. His left hand shot out in a quick jab, just grazing the big oaf's nose. His right following, pulling the giant's gaze and his guard with it. A brutal left hook smashed into the young man's face. He tottered for a moment, dazed, and then collapsed to the street in a mighty puff of dust.
You as fast as your friend there?
Two-Gun was silent, but he glared daggers at both men. Frank stepped in and snatched both ivory-handled pistols from the young man's holster.
Not fast enough to keep me from doing this.
He brought both barrels straight down, thumping the astonished man on top of his noggin.
That was some respectable fisticuffs, Mr. Carlisle. Where did you learn to fight like that?
I've done a bit of boxing in my time.
I'll bet you have, sir. I seem to remember reading about a George Carlisle who was bare-knuckle boxing champion on the Eastern Seaboard a few years back.
Too many years, I'm afraid.
So, what's your National Detective Agency got an interest in me for?
Two things, really. I've been commissioned to offer you a job.
Not interested.
Don't you even want to hear the particulars?
Not really. Now, what's the other thing?
It's your son, Frank.
What's wrong with Conrad?
Well, nothing's wrong. Quite the contrary. He's doing well. He heard about the $10,000 bounty Swan put on your head and hired us to protect you.
Damn fool, kid. He should know enough to know I, of all people, don't need a bodyguard.
At one time or another, everybody has to rest. That's where we come in. We take up the slack. That's why they call us the Eye That Never Sleeps.
So you are from Pinkerton, then?
Afraid so, Morgan. Look at it this way. I can be of help to you, seeing to it that the women are safe.
Frank rubbed his chin whiskers and thought. This Carlisle was a likable enough person. He was sure enough handy with his fists.
What kind of gun do you carry?
The boxer opened his coat to reveal a shoulder rig and the round butt of a short-barreled revolver.
It's a 3-inch Colt with bird's head grips. I had a little action work done on it by a gunsmith I know in Boston. A real pleasure to shoot.
Are you any good with it?
I'm good. Good enough to know that I don't ever want to tangle with you when it comes to gunplay.
Well, George, I don't think I'd want to box against you either. Now let's go introduce you to the girls. But I want you to get one thing straight. You're not my bodyguard. I'm bringing you along to help me look after these women. Are we clear on that?
Crystal.
George Carlisle rode a tall, flea-bitten gray that had a good deal of white in its eye and a surly disposition. Wolf gave the grumpy horse a wide berth. Frank gathered the women around him and introduced their new traveling companion as an acquaintance of his son's and a trustworthy man. Though Frank considered him somewhat of a dandy, the women seemed to think he was handsome enough. Paula Freeman almost swooned when he dismounted to help her into her wagon. Carlisle took a seat on the wagon next to Paula. A short time later, Frank trotted Stormy up next to Dixie's wagon.
Are you certain you can trust him?
He seems honest enough. He stood by me in a fight. With my reputation for drawing bullets, a lot of men would have hunted somewhere else to be. In any case, Paula seems to be quite taken with him.
Dixie nodded.
How far would you say it is to Colorado?
Frank pointed to the line of willows and Russian olive trees ahead.
That's Two Buttes Creek. The line runs more or less along there. Should be an easy crossing for us. This marks the beginning of what people are calling the Arkansas Valley. We'll be following the Arkansas River for a good way.
Carlisle had reclaimed his gray, and he too rode up next to Dixie's wagon.
Beg your pardon, Mrs. Carpenter. Morgan, did you see that thin line of smoke down by the trees ahead?
I did. This is a well-used crossing. But I suppose I should ride up and take a little reconnoiter before we commit the wagons down the hill. I'd appreciate you keeping an eye on the ladies while I'm gone. Shouldn't take long.
Without waiting for an answer, Frank squeezed Stormy into a gentle, rocking lope toward the creek. He rode to the lip of the creek bed cautiously, but let himself relax some when he saw another Conestoga wagon alongside four mules grazing on the narrow green floodplain of Two Buttes Creek. A Negro man walked out from under a smoke-colored camp awning with a rifle in hand.
I'm Friendly, leading a small wagon train west. Mind if I dismount?
Step down and have a rest.
The man smiled and let the rifle swing down to one hand like a walking cane.
Tell you the truth, I could use some conversation.
Frank stepped down from the saddle and shook the black man's hand.
Frank Morgan.
The man's eyes widened for an instant. Then he regained his composure.
Pleased to make your acquaintance, Mr. Morgan. I'm Otis Chapman, and this is my wife, Selena. Those three sets of eyes peeking out from under that canvas top are my sons, Shadrach, Meshach, and Alphonse.
No offense, but what happened to Abednego?
Alphonse is the oldest. We didn't happen on the Israelite theme until after he was born.
That's a shame. They're nice names on the ear.
No, don't you worry, Mr. Morgan. Selena and I are hard at work to bring forth a little Abednego.
Chapman smiled and winked at his chubby little wife, who shook her head and looked at the ground with a sly grin.
May I offer you some coffee?
Yes, ma'am. Thanks. Appreciate it. Mighty good. Is that a hint of chicory?
Yes, thank you. My mother was from Louisiana. When she came north to Massachusetts, she brought some fine recipes with her, including the one for this coffee.
My compliments to your mother, then. So you're from Massachusetts?
Born and educated there. My father was a free man, and so was I. I fought with the all-colored 51st.
You're lucky to have made it out alive. Most of the 51st didn't.
I was wounded about a month before the ill-fated assault on the fort. Were you in the war, Mr. Morgan?
Yeah, on the other side. Cavalry, from start to finish.
Does it bother you, seeing a colored man like me out here like this?
Mr. Chapman, I didn't own any slaves. Never had a stomach for such a thing. But I wasn't fighting for that. It wasn't about that. For me, at least.
States' rights?
Exactly. I had to follow the dictates of my conscience. How far are you folks heading?
Pueblo, or thereabouts.
Well, there's strength in numbers. And if you don't mind traveling with a bunch of women, a New York dandy and an ugly dog, and a man with a price on his head, you're welcome to throw in with us.
We all seem to be going the same way, and we're bound to bump into each other over and over anyway. I would certainly enjoy the conversations. I don't see why we shouldn't join up, do you, Selena?
No, Otis, I don't see any reason at all. As a matter of fact, you boys are beginning to grate on me. I could use a little female companionship.
It's settled, then. Oh, and Mrs. Chapman, one more thing. Would you happen to have any nutmeg? One of our women is always on a hunt for a good nutmeg to make apple pies with.
Well, of course. I got a whole jar of it.
Good to hear.
Trouble trotted up behind the wagons on the second day after the Chapmans joined the procession in the form of a longhorn cow and calf. Alphonse pointed it out to Otis, and he in turn rode up to the head of the train to tell Frank. Frank and Otis watched the piebald calf suckle.
Not a brand on either one of them, but they're not wild. A maverick cow wouldn't be caught dead this close to people, particularly with a calf that young.
The wagons had all stopped, so the youngsters could come back and look at the new arrivals.
Oh, he's just precious. Can we keep him?
Oh, no, they don't belong to us. Stealing livestock will get a man in trouble quicker than wife stealing around here. We can't keep them from trailing along behind us, but they're on their own.
Wolves might get them come nightfall.
Might, but I think the mama will keep good watch. She probably got separated from a herd to calf, and now looks at us as her keepers.
George, who'd been on a scouting trip, reined up his gray beside the Chapman's wagon and tipped his hat at Selena.
Riders coming in, Morgan. Four of them.
I'll see him. This is what I was afraid of.
A moment later, the four cowboys blew up beside them in a cloud of dust. Frank took off his hat to fan the air.
You boys sure know how to be a damn nuisance.
You got a big mouth, mister. Maybe somebody ought to close it for you.
The lead cowboy had a loud purple scarf around his neck and a wide-brimmed hat hung off his back on a leather stampede string. Frank raised a hand.
Hold on there. Don't get so riled. I was talking to my friend George there as well as you. He brought in as much dust as you did.
Well, I ain't your friend, so shut your pie hole. Them cattle is ours. Down our way, we hang rustlers.
Well, we're not down your way. And the cattle wandered up unbranded. They're not rustled. And if they're yours, take them.
I say they're stolen. And I bet I know who stole them.
You'd lose your bet. Now take your livestock and clear out.
We don't take orders from you, Morgan. Them niggers stole our cattle. Get out the way. We got ways of dealing with thieves.
Stand fast, boys.
Frank's peacemaker spit fire and smoke. An instant later, the lead cowboy lay dead on the ground, his boot still dangling from the stirrup. The other three cowboys didn't move, but glared at Frank and the others. One of them, an older man, hung back a little from the others and eyed Dixie with such contempt, Frank thought about shooting him on the spot. He had a familiar face, something about his jawline and the way he slouched on his horse. Of course. He'd been one of the men with Swan that day on the prairie, one of the men coming to gun him down and take back the women and the wagons. Frank kept the pistol pointed at the three men.
Your leader there called me by name before he died. Funny, I don't recall introducing myself.
Everybody knows who you are, Morgan.
You boys collect your friend there and get. Take your cow with you.
Nobody messes with the Circle V. Particularly not some nigger-loving two-bit gunfighter with a swelled-up view of himself. My Uncle Vic will have a word to say about this.
Keep your mouth shut, Sonny.
The older cowboy tied the dead man across the vacant saddle. Sonny shook out his lariat and built him a loop. He tossed it easily around the cow's horns. If he was an outlaw, he was a talented cowboy as well.
Let's get back. I'm sure Uncle Vic will want to hear about this. Mark me, Drifter. Your day is coming. And it's coming soon.
With that, he spun his cow pony and took the cow off at a trot toward the southeast and the herd. Keeping their eyes on Frank as long as they could, the other two cowboys turned their horses and followed their hot-headed partner.
They didn't come from that direction.
Maybe they were just out hunting strays and ran into us.
Or hunting us. That older fellow was with Swan's men when they came after us on the prairie back before we hit Dodge.
Swan?
Wilson's real name is Ephraim Swan, and he's as bad as they come, according to Bat.
What's one of Swan's gang doing herding cattle with the Circle V?
I don't know, but I don't like it one bit. Everybody stay close. We'll make an early camp. George, you, Otis, and I will rotate a watch tonight. We're a pretty easy target out here like this.
The wagons began to creak forward again, and George rode up on his gray out of earshot of the others.
Do you think they'll hit us tonight?
I'd say we should count on it.
Well, you have me and Otis. Alphonse is nigh on to 18, so I'm certain he'll be able to shoot. From what Paula's told me, Dixie is pretty handy with a gun.
Still, long odds. Somebody's likely to get hurt if we face them head on. Huh. It'll be tricky, but I think I might just have an idea.
If music be the food of love, play on!
2 hours before sundown, Frank pulled the wagons to a halt beside a dense grove of willows and silver olive trees. Wood was in relative abundance, and they enjoyed a roaring fire, hilarious stories from George, and some raucous recitations of Shakespeare from Otis. Dixie made a rich stew out of an antelope Frank had shot earlier in the day. Dutch oven biscuits and Selena Chapman's shoe fly pie rounded out the meal. Alphonse stood guard until an hour after sundown. Frank wanted the group to sound as loud and as carefree as they could. When Otis brought out a harmonica, each man took a turn around the fire with each of the women. Even Carolyn Brandon danced a bit. A tiny smile parted her lips while Frank took her in a promenade, but she never spoke. Alphonse danced with his mother, and his brothers, Shadrach and Meshach, danced with the younger girls. The fire crackled, and sparks twirled upward toward the stars in the still night air. Otis played every song he knew, and even made some up on the spot. The little group sang and laughed, some of them for the first time in weeks. Even Wolf joined in the festivities, barking and nipping at the dancer's heels.
Do you think this'll really work?
I don't know, Dix. If it doesn't, we've had a heck of a good frolic for our last night on Earth.
That's not funny, Frank.
Sorry. I think it will. But it's touch and go on a thing like this. I'm counting on what I know about human behavior, especially outlaw behavior. There's a few of them who'll face you head on and make a name for themselves. But most don't like to buck the odds. Most outlaws are cowards when you boil them down to the bone. Sneak thieves and backstabbers. If those cowboys today were the type to face us, they'd have done it right then when their partner threw down on me. Nah, they'll come at us tonight while we're asleep.
By midnight, the fire had burned to nothing but a pile of glowing embers and a few flickering flames. The women and girls had drifted slowly off to their respective wagons and tents. Frank took the watch. Except for the small remnant of a fire, the camp was dark. Only a thin sliver of a moon hung in the star-filled sky. A rustler's moon. Frank walked slowly toward a small rise near the camp. A knot formed in his chest. He'd do his part, but it was up to Dixie and the others to make things work right. He'd walked the route in the light, so he knew where he was going. Still, the way was treacherous in the dark, and Frank took a few steps at a time, watching out of his peripheral vision for any roaming rattlesnakes or Gila monsters. Wolf had better night vision than he did, so much of the time Frank just followed along behind him. From his vantage point 100 feet above the wagons, Frank could just make out an outline that looked like Alphonse's coat hanging on a stick by the dying fire. No one else stirred. At 2 in the morning, Wolf rose to his feet and stared to the southeast. Frank slowed his own breathing so he could better hear on the chilly desert air. It was a quiet sound, almost indistinguishable from the breeze in the willows, the jingle of spurs and bits. Frank watched as 6 mounted men picked their way along the wagon track. Rifle barrels glinted in the scant moonlight. Hushed voices carried in muffled bits on the wind. The men moved in around the wagons.
Pan out! Damn it, Baxter, point that thing at the wagons, not at me!
Frank licked his finger and wet the front sight of his rifle so he could catch a little more of the moon's reflection. His guess had been right on the money. These were cowards. 6 men standing in the dark, ready to execute sleeping women and children.
Fire!
Ten seconds later, 6 men and 2 of their horses lay dead and wounded on the ground. The silence that followed the shooting was eerie and hollow.
We're coming out, Morgan. Don't shoot us.
George's voice pierced the night from a stand of willows along the creek.
Careful of the wounded. They may still be able to shoot.
Help me. I ain't gonna shoot nobody. Oh, Lord. I'm shot bad.
Leave him.
Shadowed figures began to pour out of the willows and olive trees along the creek bed.
Wait till I get down there.
Alphonse stoked the fire back up to a full blaze as George approached.
Hell of a plan, Morgan.
Dixie stood close to Frank and surveyed the damage the outlaw bullets had done to the wagons. They'd never had the chance to get too many shots off, but the ones they had would have been lethal if anyone had actually been asleep inside the wagons.
Oh, I hate to think what could have happened.
Dixie tucked her head against Frank's chest. He looked over and saw Paula was pulling George close to her as well. All but one of the attackers lay dead on the ground. 2 horses had been killed by the withering volley of gunfire from Frank, George, Otis, Alphonse, Dixie, and Paula.
I wish to hell one of you women would give me a cup of water.
Frank nodded at Dixie, who brought a cup. He squatted next to the dying man and helped him take a sip. Most of the water dribbled away out of the corner of the outlaw's lips.
I need you to tell us what's going on here. Why are some of Swan's men riding for the Circle V?
Swan's men riding for the V?
The man's eyes darted back and forth in the firelight as if he didn't know where he was.
Vic Sutton. You talk to him.
ill are you on?
Does Sutton have anything to do with Swan?
Swan said 10,000 should do it. Ah, Lord, I hurt bad. Cindy. Oh, dear, sweet Cindy.
Seems like they always call out for their mama or some woman at the very last.
Wish he could have told us a little more.
So do I.
The sun was already a pink glow behind the Hogback Ridge to the east. There would be little sleep for any of them for another day.
We know damn little more than we did before.
George and Otis helped Frank drag three of the dead outlaws over to the remaining horses and tied them across the saddles.
There.
Their guns and ammunition he stowed in the back of Dixie's wagon. They were beginning to amass quite an arsenal of dead outlaws' weapons. Then Frank scribbled out a note on a piece of scrap paper.
You think they'll go back to the herd?
I do. Horses generally go to what they know, and these little ponies know where they get fed. Besides that, with these poor buggers dripping blood all over them, the animals will want to get shed of them as quick as they can.
Frank tucked the note in the dead outlaw's shirt pocket, letting it hang out enough so it would be noticed, but not fall out.
I'm guessing Sutton is trailing his herd to Pueblo. It takes a considerable crew to keep the cattle together, and he's bound to be running out of men. I'm hoping he won't try anything for a few days.
Frank fired his Colt in the air, and the outlaw horses took off at a trot toward the rising sun. Their loads of dead men flopped like the wings on three ungainly birds.
What did you write?
I appealed to Vic Sutton's common sense. I told him to meet me at the trading post 50 miles this side of Rocky Ford, and we talk like two civilized men.
That's it?
No. I also told him if I saw any more Circle V boys near the wagons, I'd send them back like these poor souls. No questions asked. I expect he'll get my meaning.
Otis rode beside Frank and looked at the distant horizon.
My land. This country's so flat, if you look hard enough, you can see the back of your head.
It's deceiving, though, my friend. A whole mess of Indians could be waiting up ahead of us over a little swell, and we'd not know it until we were smack on top of them.
That's why you keep riding ahead to scout like you do. I thought you just didn't like the smell of the mules.
A little of both, I guess. Listen, there's a little fart of a trading post about 2 miles up that way. I'd like to borrow Alphonse to go with me and check things out. I told Sutton to meet me there. I've seen him ride, and I need someone who can scoot back here if something happens to me.
Death follows you, Morgan. I'm honored that you want my boy to go with you, but his mama would have my hide if anything happened to him. Why don't I come along with you instead?
I appreciate your concerns. Mr. Chapman, it's a hard country out here. Your boy is young and inexperienced. I'd feel safer if he was with me and you here, in case the Circle V boys come riding in again. I was hoping you'd stay with the wagons and help George look after the women and your little ones.
I agree, then. You take care of my boy, though. You're right about it being a hard country. Trouble is, Mr. Morgan, I don't think you have any idea how hard it can be for a Negro man.
I see your point. We'll be careful. Anybody crosses young Al, and they'll answer to me. I'm a father myself.
Alphonse Chapman was a natural horseman and easily kept stride with Frank as they let their horses eat up the ground between the wagons and the scabby adobe trading post. He was too polite a boy to speak unless he was spoken to, which was fine with Frank and one of the chief reasons he'd brought him along.
You follow my lead.
The two dismounted outside the earth structure and tied their animals to a cedar hitching rail. Dead coyotes hung by their back legs from the exposed timber crossbeams of the roof along the outside of the building. Flies buzzed around the freshest ones nearest the door.
Stockmen pay a bounty for each critter killed. They don't do anything with the carcasses, though, so old Ramiro uses them for decoration for his combination trading post and bar. They don't smell too good when they're alive, either. Anyhow, Ram thinks the bodies frighten off the evil hobgoblins, or some such thing.
I'm surprised they don't scare off the clientele.
Huh, probably would. But old Ram sort of has a corner on the market way out here.
One other horse stood tied outside the trading post. It bore a wine cup brand, a ranch miles away from the Circle V.
Ram Solace is a friend of mine. Anything happens to me, you do what he says and you'll be all right.
Alphonse nodded. Ramiro Solace was a bear of a man, with a pockmarked face and a smile that belied his lonely, smelly existence. He pulled Frank to him in a huge backslapping hug.
Ah, Morgan, my dear old compadre. Why are you not come to see an old man more often?
The man in the corner has been asking about you. I think he's a hired gun.
Good to see you too, Ram, you old cuspidor.
Frank kept an eye on the solitary man in the back of the room while he spoke.
You gonna hug me to death, or offer me and my young friend a beer?
Of course, of course. A beer, and then some coffee, no?
You got that right.
Frank smiled and pointed to a small table, motioning for Alphonse to sit down.
Been waiting for you quite a while, Morgan. What's kept you?
Well, if I'd known you were waiting, I'd have got here faster.
Frank turned to face him, shooing Alphonse out of the way against the side wall.
Don't worry about the nigger boy. My contract's on you. There's no money in killing him.
So that's it, Mr.
Gamble. Nick Gamble out of Uvalde, Texas.
Gamble? Sorry, never heard of you. Mind telling me who hired you, Gamble? Kind of at a loss here.
Why don't you join me, Morgan? We can chat for a while before we get to the dirty work. I got no particular malice toward you. This is just business.
I'll stand. Who's paying you to brace me?
Not exactly sure. A representative gave me the money. Half before, half after the job is done.
Hope you spent the first installment wisely. Because it's awful unlikely you'll ever get to see the rest of it.
Sit down and relax for your last few minutes on Earth, Morgan. You're too tense. You have a great sense of humor. We could have been friends under different circumstances, you and I.
I doubt that. I don't hire my gun.
Ah, you don't hire it for money, but you do hire it in a manner of speaking. You hire it for a cause. Let me hear you deny that, Morgan.
There's a difference, Gamble. If you can't see it, then I feel sorry for you.
Suit yourself. I'll go ahead and kill you now before I have me another beer.
I'll give you this, Gamble. You got a certain style. But I'd just as soon you made your play. I'm tired of listening to your cock-a-doodle bullshit.
Gamble's aim went wild, missing by a good 2 feet and knocking the horn off a stuffed antelope head on the wall behind the bar. Frank's bullet tore into the gunman's chest, sending him staggering back against his table, then onto the ground. His heavy pistol clattered harmlessly to the ground. Even lung shot and in the throes of death, Gamble struggled to fulfill his end of the contract and bent to jerk a derringer out of his boot. He blinked, trying to find Frank.
Stop it, Gamble. It's over.
I took the man's money.
Not one to argue with the gaping maw of a .45 caliber derringer, Frank put a round between Nick Gamble's eyes. The bullet tore out the back of the man's skull, spattering gray matter over the table and chair behind him. Alphonse Chapman leaned out of his seat and vomited on the floor. Frank kicked the tiny double barrel away and calmly reloaded. The gunman twitched once, then lay still.
Mr. Gamble, he should have stayed back in Uvalde, Texas. I'll get him up in the bucket. You want another beer?
No, thanks. You got an undertaker around here?
Only me. I did have a go-shoot wife, but she ran off or got stolen. I know. I can hang the body outside with the coyotes.
I think we better bury him. I'll pay you for your trouble. If a man named Sutton comes by, tell him I'm sorry I missed him. But my word still stands.
There was a shuffle in the doorway behind him, and Frank turned to see a dark silhouette.
What word is that, Morgan?
Come to mop up after your hired gun, Sutton.
Frank let his hand fall to the butt of his peacemaker. The trail boss walked into the room and looked at the mess that had been Nick Gamble. Sutton wore a pistol on his left side. The leather wang still covered the hammer spur. His right hand was a tight mass of white scar where his thumb and forefinger used to be. He must have gotten his hand caught between the saddle horn and the rope, a common accident for a cattleman used to roping strays daily. He was a cowboy, and a mean one at that, but Vic Sutton was no gunfighter.
He's not one of my men. I got your message. You're damn fast on the trigger, Morgan. I'm losing a lot of men I can't afford to lose.
Tell that to the women and children they're about to murder.
Don't blow smoke up my ass. Those men were after you, not the women.
Hard to tell it from where they were aiming.
Listen, Morgan. As far as I'm concerned, you're no better than those men you sent back to me. You're all two-bit gunslingers with a short life and no savvy for God's honest work. But this has to stop. Some of Swan's men hired on with me, but they're all gone now. I can personally vouch for all the men I got left on the crew.
What about your hot-headed nephew?
Aw, hell, he thought you were stealing cattle and did what any cowboy who rides for the brand would do.
With a little too much rush to judgment, maybe.
I'll give you that, Morgan. Is it over?
As far as I'm concerned, me and you, we're hard case types, Mr. Sutton. You just want to get your herd to market, and I aim to see these wagons safe and sound to their destination. Neither of us has got much slack when it comes to our goals. I don't want to kill any more of your men, you know that. So keep them clear of me. You're a tough old cob, and I trust your word, so you trust mine. The terms of my note still stand. If I said any different, well then I'd be blowing smoke up your ass.
3 scorching days after Frank killed Nick Gamble, the wheel on the Freeman wagon shattered and fell off the axle. The tired wood and metal gave way with such a loud pop. George Carlyle drew his bird's head Colt and scanned the horizon for attackers.
You're mighty fast, Georgie. If a broken wagon wheel ever tries to brace you, it doesn't stand a chance.
It was a tedious, back-breaking affair without the proper tools. But after much labor, copious amounts of sweat, and an equal measure of cursing that drove the women and children scurrying into the cactus, the wheel was finally in place.
I'm getting too old for this. River's not much more than a half a mile away. We could all use a bath, don't you think?
A bath?
A bath, swim, call it whatever you want. I'm tired, I'm hot, my old back hurts. I imagine most of us share the same feelings. A little cold water be good for what ails us.
A half a mile and 20 minutes later, Frank brought Dixie's wagon to a halt above the bank of a gentle bend in the Arkansas River and set the side brake. The other wagons creaked to a stop behind him. The girls and younger Chapman boys wasted no time jumping out of their respective wagons. They scampered down the steep incline like so many squirrels, excited at the prospect of a swim. Betty Ellington stood by her wagon, her arms folded staunchly in front of a heaving chest.
Wearing men's breeches is one thing. Swimming with men is an entirely different matter.
You wouldn't be wearing the breeches while you swim.
I do not intend to stand
now
for...
Now simmer down, Betty. The river makes a pretty little bend here and pulls out nicely on that far side. You women go on upstream there through the willows and have your swim. Me and the boys will stay down here and splash around in the shallows and get cooled off.
You think there might be snakes in there?
Don't think so. As you're about to find out, that water is a little more than on the cold side. There could be some on the bank, though, so keep your wits about you.
If you see one, just give us a yell. We'll come running over to check on you.
I bet you would at that.
We promise not to peek more than once or twice.
Well, gentlemen, you will get no such promise from us.
The women began to cobble together some towels and fresh drawers and trooped off through the willows. Frank began to strip down by the bank and hang his clothes on the willow brush. George paid careful attention to how he laid out his pistol next to the bank, out of the water, but within easy reach, an action that impressed Frank as much as the man's speed with a gun or his fist.
Oh, you little...
Otis and his boys already splashed and played in the knee-deep water.
Have you ever been married?
As a matter of fact, I was. I was married to a beautiful young woman from Pennsylvania. Her father's a large landholder there, and the family had a great deal of money.
Ah, family didn't take to you then.
Actually, her father and I got on quite well. We had 2 children and a very nice home in upstate New York. I got along with the family fine. It was my wife I had a hard time getting along with. Through the years, I came to learn one of life's valuable lessons. Beauty doesn't guarantee tranquility. You know what the good book says?
I reckon I've got as much cause to read the Bible as anyone, but I'm not certain what it says on that particular subject.
It says, and I quote, "It is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house." Proverbs 21:9.
Truer words were never spoken. So if you don't mind me saying so, you don't seem to think Paula is going to be a brawling woman.
Fortuna, that was my first wife, she was young, barely 20 when we married. I had to watch her grow from a spoiled girl into a brawling woman. It took a while to get there, but once she did, it was a sorry sight to behold. Paula already is what she's going to be. She's been through a lot and held up remarkably well, don't you think?
I do. I'm glad you two seem so taken with each other. In my opinion, Mr. Carlisle, she could do a lot worse.
I was going to say the same thing about you and...
A shrill scream carried through the cottonwoods above the rush of the river. Both men scrambled immediately for the bank and their weapons. Frank yanked up his breeches and grabbed the rifle, not even taking time to hitch on his gun belt and pistol. George was right behind him, Bird's Head Colt in one hand and his hat in the other. Not wanting to be left behind, he hadn't bothered with his drawers or his trousers. They hadn't gone 10 steps when a single gunshot rang out, echoing across the water's surface. Frank and George redoubled their speed. More shrieks and cries of panic came from the women's side of the riverbed. Before the men made the tree line, they were met by 2 red-faced cowboys, neither of them over 17, spurring their horses away from the women as fast as their mounts would carry them. Frank aimed the rifle at the approaching cowboys. He was certain George followed suit behind him. Caught between the swimming women and 2 armed, half-naked men, the frightened cowboys reined up and raised their hands.
Don't shoot, mister.
Oh, we didn't do nothing.
Oh, dear Lord, we didn't know there was naked women down there.
Honest to God, sir. Chance is telling the gospel truth. Mr. Perkins sent me and him to find a place to cross the herd, that's all.
We swear it.
Frank lowered the rifle and glanced behind him to see George do the same. He seemed unabashed to stand naked in front of the world with only his hat and pistol.
Here, go ahead and put your hands down, boys. You said Mr. Perkins sent you on this scout?
Yes, sir. He never said nothing about looking out for no naked women. Good Lord.
Would that be Mr. Luke Perkins of the Double Diamond?
Why, yes, sir. He's our boss. Do you know him?
I do. Luke's a good friend of mine.
There was a flurry of activity in the trees. The boys' horses began to prance again from their riders' nervousness.
Mister, will you vouch for our innocence? That naked skinny woman with the dark hair tried to blow our heads off just for stumbling on him like we did.
That'd be Mrs. Ellington. She's right particular about her decency.
I'd hate for it to get back to my mama that I was killed by a naked, crazy woman. I don't think she'd ever get over it.
Dixie, Paula, and Betty trooped over the small rise at the tree line, armed to the teeth and wearing nothing but their lacy underthings. Frank quickly explained the misunderstanding, and George removed his hat for the ladies and put it where it would do the most good.
Well, I suppose since we women don't have to save the day, some of us should go back and make ourselves more presentable.
The women stood elbow to elbow looking at George, giggling at the fact that sooner or later he would have to turn around and walk back to his clothes or risk stumbling backward over the stony path.
Would you ladies be so kind as to avert your eyes?
Despite his age, the boxer was still well-muscled, and the women, enjoying their game, seemed in no hurry to let him slip away scot-free. Paula giggled, but none of the women budged.
I see. Well then, in that case, I will bid you ladies good day then.
George gave a little bow, and to the dismay of Frank, the frightened cowboys and the startled women returned the hat to his head, did a slow about face, and marched back to get his clothes.
Oh my.
All 3 women gasped in embarrassment and covered their eyes with their hands. Nobody but Frank saw it. but Paula Freeman peeked.
How far back is the herd?
An hour at most. The herd's pretty dry, though, so they're likely to speed up when they smell the water. Mr. Perkins had us keeping them well away from the river until he decided to cross.
Good thing we had our little bath when we did then. This river'll be a mud pit for hours.
You've been on drives before?
A couple. I worked on a ranch as a boy, right alongside your Mr. Perkins a good deal at the time. I'm sure he's mentioned me.
He may have, sir, but you ain't told us your name yet.
Oh, you're right, boys. All this excitement has caused a slip in my manners. Frank Morgan.
What? Huh?
Close your mouths, boys, before something crawls in and builds a web.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
You're Frank Morgan? The boss talks about you all the time. I read a book about you once.
Well, don't believe everything you read. Some yahoo could easily write that you were shot at by a naked crazy woman in raven hair. On the face of it, it'd be true. But people could read whatever they wanted to into the circumstances.
But you're Frank Morgan? No fooling?
No fooling. You boys better get back to the herd. Or if I know Luke, he'll have your hides. And mine, too, for keeping you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Is Mr. Perkins still scared of snakes?
You know the boss, all right. He kills every snake he sees and has us do the same.
When we were about 13, we were out gathering some maverick cows down in southwest Texas. A young German boy, I can't recall his name, he killed him a fat 5-foot diamondback rattler. That snake was as big around as my leg and had a head as wide as a shovel. Well, sir, this kid snuck up where Luke was snoozing and coiled that bugger up on his chest. Poor Luke woke up with that huge spade-headed serpent staring back at him. Well, he tore the blankets off him and shot the snake in half. Once he realized it was already dead, and we were all laughing our fool heads off, he grabbed up a branding iron and lit out after the poor German kid. I believe he would have beat him to death if he could have caught him.
Well, that is the worst story I ever heard. It's just awful.
Awful funny, ma'am. It was a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Morgan. We'll tell the boss you're here, and he'll be along directly.
You do that. I'd love to see that old fart.
The boys mounted their horses and galloped off toward a growing cloud of dust that approached from the south. The herd was getting close.
You ladies are in for a real treat.
Oh, is George gonna go swimming again?
You're a scamp, you know that? No, he's not. But a huge cattle herd is certainly something to see. We need to put the wagons next to the trees. Then we can watch the crossing from that little knoll up there. We're upwind, so the dust shouldn't be too bad. It'll be a sight to behold.
You, sir, are the sight to behold, Frank Morgan. Well, I just thought you should know I feel that way. Now, let's go watch those cattle.
Dixie sat between Frank and her girls as the huge herd rumbled across the river. The two bumbling cowboys had chosen well, picking a wide spot past the swimming hole where the channel spread out and the water slowed and shallowed. Her insides felt in as much upheaval as the roiling herd. From the day she'd met Frank Morgan, she'd been at odds within herself about her feelings for the man. First, because Virgil was still alive, then because he was so recently dead. As time wore on and she watched the gunfighter move and interact with the others in the train, she felt herself falling in love with him. Then she'd watched him shoot a man on the street, watched him deal so much death. There had to be an end to all the killing. After she'd heard about the fight with Nick Gamble, she'd decided that there was no way she could be happy with a man surrounded by so much pain. Content with her decision, she'd watched him work so hard to fix the wagon and then cheer everyone up with the suggestion of a swim. She'd watched the way he joked with George, the way the young cowboys revered him. This was such a different side of him. A side she had not seen, a playful side that loved life and the good and simple things that went along with it. He was so excited about running into his friend Luke, he looked as if he might burst. As the last of the bawling cows splashed and heaved their way up on the far bank, Dixie changed her mind again. She could make him happy. Frank Morgan needed saving. No matter how good he was, how quick he was, the life he lived made it certain he would meet an untimely death. Dixie nodded to herself and smiled at him without speaking. She would help him settle down, build something permanent with his life. He had saved them. It was only right and proper that she should save him. Less than 2 full days' ride to the south, Ephraim Swan leaned against a scrubby pinyon pine and cleaned the dirt out of his fingernails with a tiny silver-handled knife. The news of the Circle V Cowboys debacle had upset him enough to make him slap Carmen so badly he knocked out 2 of her teeth. It really didn't matter. He was getting tired of the sleepy-eyed tramp anyway. He'd already decided to kill her and dump her with that slimy bastard Eduardo the next time they met. That time had come.
Why don't you get down off your horse and have some brandy, my old friend?
Swan folded up his small knife and wiped his hands on the front of his trousers. The tall Mexican beamed at the thought of good brandy and shrugged.
Do you have the redheads and the others?
You know I don't, Eduardo, so why do you ask? Come, let us drink and we can discuss the new terms.
Yes, bueno. I'm happy to see you understand. I was afraid you might take this, how would you say it, a little more to your heart. I would truly enjoy some of your fine brandy.
Swan gave a tiny nod of his head, and 2 outlaws sprang on the startled Mexican and pinned both his arms to the sides of his white suit. He didn't attempt to struggle.
Que eso? What is the meaning of this?
You greasers always do go for the flashy stuff, don't you?
The outlaw twirled the shiny pistol around, watching the way the sun glinted off the gleaming barrel.
How do you do this, Ephraim? I can make you a very rich man.
You already have, Eddie.
You should not forget me, compañero. I know very many powerful men.
And you should not forget. I am one of those powerful men.
Swan swung the nickel revolver sideways, catching the surprised Mexican in the temple with a loud whack. Eduardo's eyes rolled back in his head and his knees buckled.
I still have clients who will pay a high price for the blondes and the redheads. I told you that.
I know you did, Eddie. You told me that. But you know what? I don't care anymore. I don't give a rat's ass about your clients or their prices. You think you're the only damn slaver in the world who wants to buy young, freckled kids and fresh women? You can't be that stupid.
Come now, Ephraim. We can still talk about this. I can assure you it will be mutually beneficial for each of us.
All my work, Eddie. All my hard work, and you can't wait another day? What the hell's wrong with you and your people? This has gone far beyond selling any women and red-headed orphans. This is personal now. You know what I'm gonna do to those women when I see them? I'm gonna skin every one of them alive and hack the rest into pieces so none of your stinking clients will ever get to enjoy them. In another week, you and I could have been richer than we are already, but you just couldn't wait. Now, in another week, Morgan and all the women will be dead. You don't even have a week.
No!
The shot cut short Eduardo's scream for mercy, and the 2 outlaws let his body slump to the ground. Swan pitched the gleaming pistol on top of the dead man and wiped a bit of blood from under his own eye. That always seemed to happen when he shot people at such close range. Carmen had stuck her lolling head out of the tent flap during all the screaming and commotion. Her dirty blonde hair stuck out in every which direction, and her eyelids hung half-closed against the bright sun. Swan motioned her out with a flick of his wrist.
But, darling, all I got is a sheet wrapped around me. I ain't decent.
Carmen, you haven't been decent since you turned 13. Now get out here like I tell you.
The dazed blonde woman stuck a timid foot out of the tent flap and then made her way over to where Swan stood beside the dead Mexican slave trader.
What's wrong, sugar? What do you want me out here for?
The other men began to gather around. Some grinned, others chuckled openly. Some tied their horses to the scrubby pine trees to free up their hands. They all knew what was about to happen.
What I really want is to be shed of you. Now get out of my sight.
But, Ephraim, honey, there's nothing out here but cactus and snakes. And I ain't got no shoes. You can't just leave me out here. I'd die for sure, or get killed, or worse. There's Indians out here, and all I got is this damn sheet.
I almost forgot about that.
Swan grabbed the sheet and yanked it off the crying woman.
Ephraim, what the hell are you doing?
You don't have any dignity, Carmen, so stop pretending.
Swan turned his back and carried the sheet back toward his tent. He yelled over his shoulder to the men as he went inside.
I'll be ready to go in an hour. I'm finished with the girl, boys. Do whatever you want to with her, then dump her with the greaser.
Carmen began to scream and spit as the men closed in around her. Swan poked his head back out of the tent.
But keep her quiet, will you? I'm gonna have a little nap.